In a world where action films are dumped in theaters and TV, dead on arrival.
I can't go on living this lie!
You need a hero.
Last time I trusted someone, I lost an eye.
You need a helper.
Hello, nothing to see here.
You need a healer.
That is affirmative.
You need...
We're on the air.
Professor Rick's Action Film Autopsy.
Hey, everybody. Here we are in a brand new studio where we have a wind machine to make our hair ruffle so we look very dramatic. Too bad this is not on video. Hi, I'm Rick Myers, and this is the July Fireworks episode of Professor Rick's Action Film Autopsy. With me, as usual, is on my left...
Jen.
And on my right...
Nico.
Yay! We're going to talk about some movies that I saw and they didn't see. Because mostly the movie... We have, like, most of the movies on this show I saw and you didn't see.
Yeah.
You busy? Doing a lot of busy
things? Very busy.
Yeah. Overtime.
Okay.
Trying to finish a movie.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Ferdinand comes out in theaters December 15th.
Ooh! Ferdinand, but you already... isn't that... Oh, you're finishing that one. You're
not finishing that one. Yes.
Okay, Ferdinand, look for the previews, and we'll talk about it then. I'll review it. You'll sit on either side of me.
God.
And I'll say, well, the action wasn't very good, but we'll
those
see anyway.
I would say you will probably like it.
You'll like Ferdinand.
Yes.
I believe you. What you'll I've seen like so it. Far, I've seen some previews and over at your studio when I was going to see a couple of movies. You had, like... What is it, 25 minutes, 40 minutes playing endlessly in the cafeteria?
Yeah, we have a TV that just loops whatever was like the dailies that have been done.
Oh, yeah. So I've seen a lot of it, and it was very nice. Anyway, so I guess should we start with something we've all seen or one of the ones that... Oh, yeah, we should break down... That's right. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 movies.
Let's do one.
I've seen 3, so and you haven't.
We've seen 2.
So I'll do... We'll talk about the first one we've seen, the one we missed on the last episode, which we can take care of very quickly, which is Transformers. Transformers 5, The Last Knigget, The Last Knight, directed by Michael Bay and written, get ready, these are the credited screenwriters.
I'm really afraid.
Art Markham, Matt Holloway, Ken Nolan, Akiva Goldsman, and that's the ones that are listed. Who knows how many? Now get a load of this. Obvious, it's obvious to me that Michael Bay chose these screenwriters specifically like a little jigsaw puzzle. Why did he choose Art Markham and Matt Holloway? Probably because they wrote the screenplay for Iron Man. Why did he use Ken Nolan? Because he wrote the screenplay for Black Hawk Down. Why did he use Akiva Goldsman? In addition to doing Batman Forever, he also wrote the screenplay for I, Robot.
So they're all good writers.
They're all very good writers. And there's also a lot of other people who did the story because, you know, everything is world building now. You know, everybody wants to have the Dark Universe or whatever, or the Transformers Universe or the Marvel Universe or the DC Universe. Now they're talking about doing a James Bond universe.
Oh, shut the hell up.
I thought James Bond's already a universe.
No,
apparently not. I don't know what they're going to do. Bring in Jason Bourne and Matt Helm. I'm not sure what they're planning
to do. That's kind of dumb. Same thing with Transformer. They already have Transformer 5. It's already a vast universe. They don't need
and
to
they're also
on top
doing,
of it.
Even though Michael Bay keeps promising he's not going to make another one, they're already doing a Bumblebee spinoff.
Right.
That's already in production.
What kills me is that the comic books are actually, like, I've heard really good things about the comic books.
Well, that's always been the case.
All of the non-movie, like, there's enough material in there where it's like, how can you not extrapolate a good story?
And it has its fans. And the fans actually have been waiting, just like DC Comics fans have been waiting for Zack Snyder to get his hands off of the DC superheroes. All the Transformers fans have been waiting for Michael Bay to let go.
I really didn't think he... I was surprised when I found out he was directing this
one.
Right.
I thought he would stop directing. I mean, producing
but
not
producer.
Directing.
No, it just... I mean, I can understand why he did it. Transformers 5, The Last Knigget, is not a terrible movie. I mean, but then again, I knew what I was going to see. I've seen all of the other ones, the last one on a plane. What is it, Mika? What do you need to do?
grab a pillow.
Oh, he's going to grab a pillow. You don't have to. You can just do it. You know, we keep it loose here at the old action film autopsy. Oh, you put it. Oh, look at that. He's putting. What I'm afraid. Will that so muffle? Will that muffle? No.
It'll bring it up. Muffle the sound.
All right. Good.
But it would dampen the any.
I'm sure our fans love it when we screw up. Anyway, it's. I knew what to expect, and it was better than the last one. It wasn't as...
So it was good because your bar was so low.
Yeah. But also, it's fun to watch it as an animated movie because it is basically animation. Mm-hmm. Mark Wahlberg is far superior to that other guy. What's the other guy, the loony guy?
Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, what's his name?
Oh, no, Shia LaBeouf was in the first three.
Yeah, the first three.
Then they got Wahlberg.
Wahlberg is great.
No, you go back to it.
And they have these great voices, John
Goodman. He keeps telling everyone he's an inventor.
Yeah.
The fourth one.
You're just quoting Honest Trailer.
The Honest Trailer's ones are valid, too. So it is, as I said, it is not just mind candy, this movie. It's not mind candy. It's not even close to mind candy. It's not just eye candy is what I wanted to say. It's eye cotton candy, which is different. Some candies are good. Mm-hmm. Some candies have even nutritional value. Snickers is a good candy. Cotton candy? Just kind of solid sugar. It hurts my teeth just mentioning cotton candy. And that's what Transformers was. However, they also had something that entertained me until the character got killed, which is Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, wait, the dude from all the other ones? The annoying guy?
No.
Like, from the trailer, at least, he's sole role in this film. It's just to deliver
comedy, exposition and other things. It's Sir Anthony Hopkins. For a reason. He is an awesome actor. And to watch him do a lesson in bad acting, it's like watching Angela Lansbury on Murder, She Wrote. Because on Murder, She Wrote, she overacted, but she underplayed her overacting. And here's, this guy's a sir for a reason. He's an awesome actor. I called it basically, this was an extended audition for Doctor Who.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, and he was just so refreshing to watch him actually live in this movie while everyone else was kind of like a victim of this movie, you know, just had to survive this movie. And Wahlberg did a fine job. The supporting players. Also, the movie had a sense of humor about itself. Basically, it was Michael Bay saying, yeah, I know, and I don't care. Mm-hmm. I know what these are. I don't care that I sexualize a 12-year-old. It doesn't matter to me.
Oh, that,
I'm going
that
to
little
do
girl?
It. Yeah.
What was her storyline?
Well,
how long was she even on screen?
Oh, she was in it a lot. She was threaded throughout. There's a period. It's a 2.5-hour movie or whatever. Ugh. There's a period where pretty much everybody disappears at one point, and then they come back because what happens is that our hero, our Transformer hero, Optimus Prime, who's basically victimized through most of the movie, comes back as himself, and then it becomes about him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's if you like. If you like Carnival Eats, if you like going to carnivals and having that kind of food, this is Transformers. And like I said, it's better than the last one. It has a sense of humor about itself where they comment on the movie itself, basically, even though they just managed not to break the fourth wall, mm-hmm. but they comment on the wardrobe of the women. The woman, I mean, Mark Wahlberg comments on, they comment on their own music, on the bombastic music. But they do it within the context of the film.
See, I feel like that would piss me off.
It probably would piss you off, but me, I was happy for small favors.
Now, how many Chinese milk did they drink in this film?
Soy milk? I don't remember. I should have been looking for that, but let's talk about
the Honest Trailer, like starring Xbox, Chevrolet.
Oh, everything.
Chevrolet.
But at least they're right up front about it, and I didn't... And,
Budweiser.
Yeah, but a lot of Budweiser.
A lot of it.
Supervising stunt coordinator was Mike Gunther, who started in 1965, has 175 TV and film stunt credits. Stunt coordinator Nick McGinless started in 1999. He has 79 credits, but he's mostly a stuntman. This is like his first jump up to stunt coordinator. And the action is very nicely done. The last couple, I don't know again whether I've been getting used to watching these movies. But the first, like the third one and the fourth one, I really couldn't tell what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
But this was in a big, beautiful digital theater with not any 3D. That 3D is like wearing sunglasses while watching a movie. So there was no 3D, so I could see everything, and all of it came together. And it was not a great... I would probably rank it over, for enjoyment, I'd rank it over Cars 3.
Okay.
Yeah. But you don't have to see it, and there's no reason you should see it. I think there's no massive insights. There's no really great hand-to-hand fighting, although there's a lot of robot fighting. And again, I have to admit...
They keep showing the sword. Do they use a sword at all?
He does use a sword, and he uses it okay. But again, we have a bunch of characters who have specific strengths,
mm-hmm.
not even powers. There's one guy that the guy John Goodman does the voice of is, you know, basically a character from Nick Fury's Howling Commandos. He's the sergeant with the big walrus mustache, except he's a robot, and he uses a gigantic robotic Gatling gun.
Mm-hmm.
And again, everything is just sort of let's punch each other, let's stab each other, let's hit each other, let's throw each other. Nobody does anything, just like that other movie, Pacific Rim, that I complain about. Nothing's really differentiated, and nothing builds, and there's no surprises in the action. It's a lot of noises. It's not nuanced. Nuance. Can't use nuance in a Transformer film, but nothing is clever, imaginative, insightful, useful, exciting. It's interesting. It's cotton candy. All right, I can stop talking about a lot. Let's talk about something we did all see.
Let's talk about how Pacific Rim is an international treasure. Okay, moving on.
It could have been a galactic treasure had they simply had the robots fight in national style. They're all being manned. Haven't we talked about this before?
Yes, we have. It's the best thing ever.
Well, let's go to the next thing. Is Baby Driver the best thing ever?
Yeah. It's that good. Too.
No. Oh, my. Well, here we go. Baby Driver. Edgar Wright wrote it and directed it. That's what he's been trying to do it for years, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
He got advantage. Basically, I bet what happened, this is my bet because this is what Hollywood does. He was going to do Ant-Man, and they had a creative difference, the way they had a creative difference with the guys who did the Lego movie Han Solo film,
yeah.
where they got rid of those directors. But, you know, Marvel / Pixar / Disney / Lucasfilm, they're fair. They're nice people. So I bet they said to him, yeah, we're not going to, you know, but what do you want to do? Can we help you do something else? Because we feel bad about shit-canning you. And I bet he said, oh, I have this 80-year-old script in my drawer that I wanted to do based on a Simon & Garfunkel song called Baby Driver. So now he gets to do Baby Driver.
Yeah, but Baby Driver was Sony.
Yes, but everybody's... Yeah, and guess what was Sony before, too?
Spider-Man.
That's right. They have a good relationship with Amy Pascal at Sony.
Mm.
So I'm guessing... Again, I don't have facts on that, but I'm guessing that's it. But Edgar Wright did it. Now, this is an action movie. Baby Driver is a... But it is a car action movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a gun and car action movie. More and more gun-fu, more and more car-fu. So they had an amazing stunt team of precision drivers. That's how they're listed. Stunt coordinator was Darren Prescott, who did John Wick 1 and 2.
Mm.
He started stunt work in 1994, and you know he's good because even from 1994, he has 120 credits.
Jeez.
Wow.
Now, when you see something like that on the listing, that means he's good because he gets work.
A lot of work.
Yeah, 120 credits from 1994, all the way up. The stunt coordinator was also brilliant about this. They had another stunt coordinator just for the cars, and that was Robert Nagel, who's basically deified as a stunt driver.
Okay.
And they said, you got to come on, be the stunt coordinator on this. Because this is such a big stunt and car action movie,
mm-hmm.
they had an additional stunt coordinator. That's how he's listed. That's mm-hmm. the credit, additional stunt coordinator, not co-stunt mm-hmm. coordinator, not assistant stunt coordinator, additional. And that's Chris O'Hara, who did Jurassic World. And he started in 1992, and he has 131
wow.
stunt credits. If you want a lesson in stunt work, Baby Driver's the baby. Now, mm-hmm. what do you... Go ahead. I've talked enough. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I just love it.
Like, why do you love it?
Let me like it.
For me, it was...
You like it, she loves it.
I really like Edgar Wright's films, except, I mean, I didn't like... World's End at all. But,
oh, that had one great, really amazing fight scene in it, though.
Oh, well, yes. I can appreciate the techniques behind
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But plot-wise. But for me, this was just like... It was cool because I got to see Edgar Wright evolve cinematically, where there were still a lot of his calling cards that you expect, but at the same time... Like, a lot of this stuff, like, I know a lot of people who kind of felt like, oh, this is his least Edgar Wright film, and for me, it's like, no, he's evolving, like... This is him in his element. Like, this was him, like, just getting to do what he wanted to do, and so perfectly. And for me, it was just funny because, you know, it's, like, this really serious plot. People are dying and things, but it still has this, you know, cartoony humor to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, our friend mm-hmm. pointed out, you know, even the end, the villain becomes so over the top. It felt like something out of, like, you know, even just Scott Pilgrim, or even, for me, it almost yeah. felt like, kind of like the bad guy in, like, a Wes Anderson film where it's, like, you take him seriously, but at the same time, it's, like, it kind of got a little bit, like, cartoon villainy where, like, he just yeah. kept coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's happening now is...
The music, obviously.
Yeah, he's an... Edgar Wright is an auteur. I mean, he's the guy, yeah. you know, he's doing what Tarantino does, which is when I go to a Tarantino movie, I'm expecting it to be set, not in the real world, mm-hmm. not in the movie world, in Tarantino world. In Tarantino land. And that's what Edgar Wright is. Edgar Wright is his own universe.
Mm-hmm.
He creates Edgar Wright films in Edgar Wright world.
Right.
And I'm surprised by your friends who, because to me, I agree with you, this is a natural progression.
Mm-hmm.
This is just like Edgar Wright. Again, this is why I think he had the freedom to do it, because they said, we want to make it up to you for screwing you over. And so they said, yeah, do what you want. It was a low-cost thing. I know I've heard some of the actors talking about it, and they were ecstatic
mm-hmm.
because they had such wonderful interaction and freedom to create as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They do almost all the filming on set.
Yes.
Pretty much. Yeah.
I mean, this is another one of those great things to look up on IMDb, because usually when you get to visual effects, which is always... Visual effects is always listed just before stunts.
Mm-hmm.
And so visual effects goes on for page. And this... visual effects goes on for like a half a page, and stunts goes on for 2 pages. And that's kind of cool that it's all real and in your
hands.
Yeah,
all practical.
Yeah.
I like closed circle movies. I like setups. I like payoffs.
I was like, that was this entire film.
It was, but then he threw in some curves. And I'm still unsure. In other words, the main villain seems to be Jamie Foxx. He's being set up. I mean, Jamie Foxx is a stone cold psycho.
Well, he was throughout the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, he did die sooner than anybody thought he would
yes.
die.
I didn't have that expectation.
That he would die, or that he would die so soon?
No, that he would die so soon or
yeah,
later.
That's what
he's
we're saying,
the villain,
though.
And then as soon as they set up the fact that, you know, he's going to probably kill them. At that point, it built up nicely to that point, because that point he's so fed up. He's just he's just done with this guy.
Yeah.
He wanted, like, out of his life.
And also, Baby Driver got rid of him because he's a dangerous guy and was threatening
right.
everybody he
and
loved.
And because of his action,
yeah.
and that this action created this new villain who was very close to him. I feel like that...
Yeah,
that,
I appreciated that.
That changed.
Yeah, you really liked the couple. Like,
yeah,
really,
that's
I really
buddy.
Liked
it's
the
John
couple.
Hamm.
Yeah, you,
John Hamm becomes
right.
the psycho... won't give up
right.
villain
yeah.
because
yeah.
his wife gets killed.
Right.
But not through Baby Driver's fault, but by Baby Driver killing Jamie Foxx, it ruins the plan, and she gets up and starts shooting, which is something she shouldn't have done anyway. My issue, I mean, John Hamm loved this movie because he didn't have to play the hero anymore. He could play a villain. But he is so effing likable.
Yeah.
Yes.
So when he became this won't give up villain who threatens Baby Driver's life and the totally innocent Baby Driver's girlfriend.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'm not sure I'm happy.
Yeah.
I appreciate this. It's interesting. And also it set up the best, I do this, therefore this happens, therefore this happens, therefore this happens.
Mm-hmm.
But none of it particularly shocked or surprised me in terms of, you know, he hits, a lot of people are ripping off John Woo. And in Fast and Furious 8, or Fast 8, or Furious 8, or whatever it's called, The Fate of the Furious, they rip off Hard Boiled. Here, in Baby Driver, they give an homage to Bullet in the Head, which ends with a car jousting sequence, which is astonishing, and, you know, gut punching and amazing and just eye bulging. And this was kind of like not that. So you guys enjoyed it more than I did because
right.
It's not as good as the Bullet in the Head car jousting.
Yeah, I feel like in this, like, you were pulling, you and like some of the other like kind of older guys that we saw the movie with.
I'm an older guy.
I feel like you guys were pulling all of these references,
right.
You know,
right.
And
just as Edgar Wright was.
And Edgar Wright is like, he's like a filmmaker, like,
yeah.
He's like deep in there, yeah. Like right. Movie trivia, like Criterion Collection, like.
Well, we saw it at the Alamo Drafthouse,
mm-hmm.
And they had a thing on before the movie with Edgar Wright showing you his five favorite car chases.
Yes, I would have to say if you do have a local Alamo Drafthouse.
Oh my gosh, go!
Do go. The food is amazing for
but.
Us. But I have to say, because we watched it second time
the
in
sound
fine.
Oh AMC, yeah, we saw it another time and it was okay. Not as
AMC.
Satisfying.
The sound. It wasn't, like, the music wasn't loud enough.
Yeah.
And it didn't, so it didn't, like, soak you into the world as it did when we're watching it in Alamo.
I wish I had seen it with you because my issue was I'm unsure. The food is awesome, but I was distracted. And I don't like being distracted from the movie by this awesome food.
Yeah.
I had a main course and a dessert. And it was like, and what I remember most about the movie was that it was awesome. The food and
oh, yeah,
the dessert
your ginger
was great.
Beer was super
yeah,
good.
Oh, the ginger
or
beer.
The not even beer. It was ginger soda or whatever.
It was ginger beer.
Yeah.
It's ginger beer.
From,
it's
like,
not alcoholic.
Like a
yeah, yeah.
Film perspective, I feel like Alamo Draft House, like they pay more attention to the film.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, like I said, when we watch it in AMC,
yeah.
it kills
it
me a little
vibrant,
bit.
Vibrant. Yeah.
Yeah. It kills me a little bit because the music plays such a big role in the film.
Yeah.
And because of, like, the volume, because of
really?
Like, yeah, it's
wow.
Pretty much just volume.
Like, this movie's going to get nominated for sound design, like, without a doubt.
Probably.
Like, sound mixing.
It's not
I
like, overall, too.
I wouldn't
like,
bet on it, though.
Just the music volume wasn't loud, and that wasn't, like out with the punch.
No.
And it just didn't feel as good.
Now I have to talk about things, and please don't hit me, Jen. The movie did not do as well.
Yeah.
As the studio wanted.
Mike, that's not your fault.
And my feeling, my feeling about that, because I'm a great lover in the audience, because the audience is almost always right. And I'm sorry, again, I don't want to ruin anything for anybody, but there's another movie we're going to talk about which has an astonishingly good ending. That is an ending that is just like awesome.
I was gonna say.
I was like, I'm leaving.
Like,
I'm literally
Baby,
going to
Baby
leave.
Driver. It's a great film.
It is a good film, but
it has for me. It has two limited factors that may
two
that could have that would.
What are yours?
More.
I'll say what
the first one is. It's rated R.
Oh,
which,
I don't have any problem.
Which with,
in terms of audience.
In terms of
yeah,
audience,
okay.
like weaker box office.
Weaker box office
no.
Or rated R films.
Nope.
Usually, unless, again, like a superhero film or whatever,
nope.
When there's a lot of killing.
There are R-rated comedies that if they're good, they work.
Right, but then the second one, it's obviously Spider-Man, which took a huge
nope.
Chunk of...
You can never use that as an excuse.
No, I feel like...
Yeah, you can.
Whenever you have a good action
movie,
film versus a Marvel superhero action film, the Marvel superhero action film...
I mean, I'm hoping
Star
it has
Wars.
Legs, but there's like no
yeah,
guarantee.
Like it just
the
movie theater we were at,
those
we saw Despicable Me 3.
Yeah,
they had like maybe one Baby Driver. They had like four Spider-Man.
Yeah, but that's because in the first weekend it didn't do well enough. Now here's the deal: the movie that shall not be mentioned with you in the room, and Baby Driver, to me, were text. It just completely solved a long-held theory that. Great ending can make up for a soft beginning. If it's a great ending, it's got legs.
I mean, but that's not gonna...
If it doesn't have a great ending, it will slowly erode... It has, in my case, slowly eroded the quality of the film. Mm-hmm. If the end, and Baby Driver, sadly, there's another thing that was soft in that. Well, yeah, the whole ending is based on his girlfriend, this wonderful waitress, this a girl who only exists in movies, and she is so ethereal, she is so perfect, she is so wonderful, she is so pretty, that the ending turns into what could be a fantasy, a dream. He could have died somewhere in this movie, and the rest of the movie would have been his dream. Because that ending is done, so the movie is good and fast and hard and punchy and fun and exciting, and the ending is so soft and idealized. And, I mean, he's consciously using camera filters to make everything dreamlike.
Which I get.
I get it too, but I don't appreciate it, and I don't think it was a wise choice. Had he done what he did at the end of this movie, which have things turn out well for the two of them, had he done it in a similar style, in that a montage of his life in prison, his friends on the outside staying connected, visiting him, but does it with a really cool music and punchiness, and then it would have been earned. But because it was so fantastical.
Baby didn't want that life anymore. The whole film was him trying to escape that high octane lifestyle.
Yeah, but see, it's called the long leap. You want a compromise. It doesn't have to be a high octane lifestyle. It just has to be cleverly edited with clever allusions and visual metaphors rather than just idolatry.
I feel like I personally like the ending, how it's done. Because up until that point, I mean, like you said, everything's kind of Eggerite.
I didn't believe
flashy,
it.
Flashy, high octane. But at that point, before that, he's always Baby.
I understand.
It's not until there's one very hard line. As soon as that's been said, the movie kind of shifts tone into the reality. There's no more fantasy.
Yeah.
It's that when Deborah, the girlfriend, says "I still can't believe
your name is Miles."
Yeah. And that's when he's in the court case. And from that point on, all the tonal shift. It's completely because he's no longer Baby.
I understand.
He's not Miles, and that's the world Miles lives with no music because he's
But I understand that, but he chooses. That was another thing I mentioned actually at the thing. It would have been great because he has been deafened in some of the accidents that lead up to it. As that sequence continued, the music should have gotten louder.
But the music should have gotten louder. It would have been back to the fantasy. He's no longer in fantasy.
No, he is in fantasy. That's the problem. He goes from this hard-edged nightmare to this, from my point of view, unbelievable fantasy. All I ask of a movie is that I believe it while I'm watching it.
Unbelievable fantasy before that. I mean, it was a very dark fantasy.
But it was a credible fantasy that I bought into.
No, that was not a credible fantasy. He was able to go through all of the whole thing was he was living in this fantasy world. He was drowning out all the bad things he was doing with his music. He was pretending he wasn't involved.
But
in
it was awesomely entertaining.
Yeah, I'm not saying it wasn't.
And the ending wasn't.
The ending entertaining. I found it satisfying.
You didn't find the entertaining.
I didn't find the ending
because
believable.
Because it wasn't the way that you expected Edgar Wright to do it, and he tried something.
No. That's not bad. It's not the way I wanted him to do it.
Yeah, exactly. You're not letting him grow and try something new, even if
that's not nothing new.
I wasn't even thinking of it was in terms of style change.
He didn't do it well.
I personally feel like. That it's not even a style change. It's just the fantasy versus reality.
No, you can't. It's fantasy versus a different fantasy. That's not even close to reality at the end.
It's a different fantasy because before the fantasy he was Baby and then he switched to Miles.
I know that
the switch in the
that's
movie.
Not the issue. That's fine. That's awesome.
Uh-huh.
But the choice he made to present Deborah and Miles as Deborah and Miles was a total cotton candy, soft focus, unbelievable, not credible, not acceptable fantasy. It's not reality. It's not even close to reality.
Neither was the final boss fight.
In what?
In Baby Driver.
Well, that's fine. But
it's fine that this character gets hit. It's fine that Kevin Spacey's character magically becomes like Father of the Year and like gets himself killed to defend him. It's fine
that was
like,
a surprise.
This guy gets shot multiple times, gets hit with cars multiple times, and keeps coming back.
But that the whole movie set that up. Nothing. This ending.
No, they didn't. They.
Yes, they did.
They were very mortal characters up until that point.
No, they weren't.
Yes, they were.
I disagree. We are.
Honestly, if Jamie Foxx had magically reappeared, I would have been less surprised.
Be that as it may, you liked the movie. I didn't like the movie. The world agrees with me. The box office agrees with me.
Thumbs up if you like it.
I will sit. If I get to talk to Edgar Wright, I will say, let's redo that ending. Let's just redo it, and you'll have a successful film. Because the movie that I can't mention in front of you, because you haven't seen it yet, and you don't want it spoiled, is the polar opposite. Now, and prove to me that you have a great ending, you're good. Anyway, so we did Baby Driver, so now I'll talk about The Villainous.
Yes.
The Villainous is a Korean film. It is a very clear combination of La Femme Nikita and Hardcore Henry. Have you seen either?
I've seen Hardcore Henry.
Yeah.
Have you seen Femme Nikita?
No.
Well, this movie is that. Femme Nikita is about a young lady being turned into an assassin.
Oh, wait, Nikita.
Nikita.
Yeah. No. Called Young Nikita.
No, La Femme Nikita is the original French movie that everything was based on.
Nikita's Zoe Saldana.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's different.
I say that was like, this is like La Femme Luke Benson's Nikita. Sequel to The Professional that he couldn't actually legally make.
Right, La Femme Nikita was the Luc Besson movie, French movie. They made a Chinese movie called Black Cat that was bit off of this. Now, this is the Korean one. And for years, I've been seeing Korean movies, but I've been seeing their comedies and their historical dramas, which are awesome. Musa, War of the Arrows, My Sassy Girl. Have you seen My Sassy Girl?
I have.
Did you like it?
Yeah.
You saw the Korean one?
Yeah.
Okay, because they did remakes.
No, Korean comedies are really
just
Korean.
Awesome. Yeah. But I've noticed in their action films, they're becoming increasingly Thai or Indonesian in that.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I love a good mystery, and the Koreans make these amazing police crime thrillers. Matter of fact, I have at home The Wailing, which we should all watch, and Train to Busan, which we should all watch.
Oh, that one. That one's on Netflix.
Yeah, but anyway, but the thing I've been noticing lately is that they make movies that just wallow in misery and sadism and unkindness and brutality, and they don't release you from them. They have these amazing mystery movies that don't have a mystery in them. They're simply crimes that are not solved. And they make you love the protagonist who's trying to solve the crime, and then he doesn't. And it ends after 2.5 hours. I mean, they're incredible mood pieces. But for me, you can imagine me, not satisfying in any way, and they're making more and more and more and more and more and more of these. So, I have to assume it's because if you're going to live underneath North Korea your entire life, there's a sense of paranoia and unfinished business going on in your creative thinking. The Villainous, if you've seen Hardcore Henry, if you've seen La Femme Nikita, clearly it's directed and written by Byung Gil-young and Byung Sik-young, who may be related, may not, who knows. They worked on Confession of Murder, which was a masterpiece of what I'm talking about, in that, oh my, you know, amazing, amazing, engrossing, oh, I hope they solve. No, they don't solve the mystery, okay. we have a lot of dead bodies.
How is this like Hardcore Henry?
Oh, the
in the way it's shot?
The action sequences are not what he obviously saw Hardcore Henry. The first 8 minutes, he's doing Hardcore Henry one better. The first 5 minutes is a person from the camera's point of view taking out a huge group of killers in a hallway, and then the point of view person walks into a room, and the room is a gym, so all the walls are mirrors, and you see it's a young lady, and then he goes Hardcore Henry one better. And then the whole movie, He learned the lesson of Hardcore Henry. Hardcore Henry, if you haven't seen it, listeners, is all from the point of view of the leading character,
right,
who is a cyborg?
Yeah.
Android?
Yeah, yeah.
Who's trying to solve the mystery of his, in quotes, wife's disappearance. And it's all from his point of view, the whole movie, and
right,
he's in constant action, in constant violence, in constant motion, all from his point of view. So you see his hands, sometimes you see his legs, there's a lot of blood, it's all sorts of stuff. But that's all the movie is. It's mm-hmm. just unremitting. It's, what is it, 90 minutes of that.
Right.
With hardly a moment to breathe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Byung gives you moments to breathe. However, the problem is that the moments he chooses to give you to breathe are kind of like, basically the leading character, and understandably so, it's a young lady
mm-hmm.
who grew up in a mob family and is trained in a certain way,
right,
and then her father is killed, so she goes on vengeance, and then she is brought into, when she's captured after killing this whole gang who she thought killed her father, she is sprung from jail by, I guess, the Korean Secret Service, who say, if you work for us for 10 years, assassinating people for us, we will let you go. And since she's, and then the person who trains her winds up getting her pregnant, so she has the baby, and they use the baby as basically the carrot for her to do the full 10-year stint. There's some really amazing, surprising, interesting things that happen, especially in this killer school,
mm-hmm.
where she's, in order to become a better killer, they say, you're a pretty good performer, become an actress, and they have performers. There's recurring scenes where one of the other women who have been forced into this life is trying to escape, and she comes into the dressing room where all these ballerinas are, and says, show me the way out of here, which our hero did earlier. And somebody says, yes, take me with you. I also want to go, but of course it's a trap.
Mm-hmm.
And the person doesn't really want to go with it, and they just wind up bringing you back. And then right after that happens, our hero does that too. Our hero changes at that point. She's given plastic surgery and becomes a completely different actress, an older actress.
Oh.
But
that's interesting.
It is safe to say that throughout the movie, she's basically in shell shock. She's basically in shock
mm-hmm.
the whole movie. She never really thinks for a moment. And you know how I like characters who think.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't think for a second.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm watching this movie, admiring these amazing action sequences. But for me, the action sequences have to be supported by the rest of the film.
Right.
By the emotional context. By the action. The action is really awesome. And she is shown to be, I mean, they give you enough training sequences where you see that, yeah, she's way ahead of everybody because she's cold-blooded.
What style are they fighting? Like, she's fighting with? Is she using Thai?
This is gun-fu. Gun-fu.
Oh, gun-fu.
Gun-fu.
Okay.
And motorcycle-fu, bike-fu, and car-fu. Tofu. There's tofu at some point. She uses her toes. No, she doesn't. I mean, but mostly it's guns and one of the other issues that Korean films have is that supposedly their national martial art is Taekwondo.
Oh, Taekwondo, that's
which
right.
is not their national martial art. It's a Japanese martial art which was forced upon the Korean people during the occupation. And I know a lot of people will quibble with me on that. However, it is intrinsically flawed, energetically closed sport, and it's very difficult to actually use it on screen with any power.
Mm.
So there's a lot of MMA in this.
Okay.
And everything. But the issue is that she has these wonderful lyrical moments with her baby, who's absolutely angelic. And I'm sitting at home just going, what do you think is going to happen? As she's betrayed again and again and again and mm-hmm. again by her own people. Do you think they're going to stop betraying you now?
Mm.
She's constantly accepting what they say.
Right.
And I'm going, okay, I appreciate that you're in shock throughout. And I understand. It makes sense that you would be in shock throughout. But this is not enjoyable for me. And I'm going, oh, that's right. It's a Korean film. I forgot. And it leads to an ending where, of course, Everyone's been lying to her. You can guess. I mean, with Korean movies now and Indonesian movies and Thai movies, you can pretty much guess what's going to happen. Well, I had a friend who used to come over and watch Japanese movies with me, and he goes, "This is the one, everybody's going to die, right?" I said, "Yeah, it's a Japanese movie. Of course everybody's going to die." Here it's going to be like, yeah, everybody's going to betray her. The person who is the last possible person who could be the killer, of course, is the killer. And in this case, it's the person who impregnated her, who wound up being her father's killer. And he so cold-bloodedly kills the baby. Not the baby, the young girl. She's a young girl. So cold-bloodedly does it. And then the movie seems to revel in it.
That's really
which
funny.
Leads.
He's like Old Boy.
I know. Well, Old Boy is the ultimate Korean thriller. Mm. And the end of this movie is just one. They're trying to outdo the first 8 minutes. She's just trying to get her hands on this guy to kill him. And cars, motorcycle, buses, buildings, everything. It's just brutal, 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 brutal. And I have to tell you the ending because I just thought it was perfect in terms of I threw my hands up, which was at the end, she finally manages to kill him. She wrecks the city. She is just like at the end of the first 8 minutes, she's surrounded by the cops. But in the first 8 minutes, when she's faced by the cops, she just sort of like goes, huh, you know, she accepts it. She's in shock. At the end of the movie, she goes mad. He clearly goes insane.
Oh, wow.
She just starts laughing. Great acting. Her eyes are, you know, just, you could tell she's just gone nuts.
She has nothing to lose.
Yeah, she has nothing to live for at this point either.
Yeah, exactly.
So she's just going to go get 3 squares a day and kill everybody who gets near her in jail.
Wow.
So I would love for you to see this. I have it.
It sounds like a movie I would like to watch.
I'm going to be showing the first 8 minutes. It's not out yet.
Okay.
I have it, but don't tell anybody. I'll be showing the first 8 minutes at my San Diego Comic-Con Kung Fu Extravaganza, if all goes well. That's one of the 3 to 4 premiere previews we're doing at the 20th anniversary this year. People, I will have just done it once you're hearing this. 2 days ago, if you're hearing this, if everything went well, I did the Kung Fu Extravaganza with 8 minutes of
the villainous. And you just spoiled the whole movie.
Well, this is 2 days after.
They have 2 days to get the movie and watch it.
Okay, let's do our theme song. There'll be spoilers. 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 It'll be in the supplementals.
Yeah, you should make it big in the supplemental because this is
everybody knows.
Just put a timestamp to skip this part.
Right. It sounds like this again. Because
we want people to see this one.
It sounds like a pretty good film.
Again, the plot's not going to... Knowing the plot's not going to ruin this movie in any way.
The guy that kills the baby,
you ruined the shock value.
Yes, if I see the
I'm glad.
Time.
I'm glad. I wish I had known.
I know. That's why you kept trying to bribe our AV guy to tell you the ending of Alien Covenant,
which I'm still regret seeing. I am so unhappy about seeing that movie. I hate that movie so much.
So bad.
And it set the new bar for me in terms of how much I can hate a film.
Mm.
But anyway, now let's get...
It's not a new bar.
It's a new bar for me.
The worst film.
I put it over The Omen. I put it over The Seven. Despicable Me 3.
Oof.
Now,
that's a bar.
Better,
that's just a kidding. Bad movie.
Better or worse movie. Than Captain Underpants?
Worse.
Why? Yeah. Why was it worse?
Because they keep trying to do the same stuff, except this one wasn't even... like as enjoyable or at least it wasn't
funny.
Even as forgivable as Despicable Me 2 or The Minions. This one that had
like
so
Minions.
Many different plots that they tried to like weave and satisfy, like they had entire character arcs introduced and solved in the same sequence.
Yeah.
Right.
As I said in my little mini review on Facebook, ideas come out of nowhere and go nowhere.
Yeah, it's just like there were so many stupid things going on.
But
the villain is such an afterthought.
Yeah, it really was. Like, I thought the brother was going to be something more
than
he was.
Me too. Nobody was more
than
he
was. With the villain, like, The villain's so one dimension, which is fine, but like they keep playing, like they keep bringing back to him and showing like sort of like the 90s or 80s, whatever, nostalgic things that he's been doing.
But he was like, so, he could have been anybody. He's so boring. Irrelevant.
It's Trey Parker, one of the great voices of all time, creator of South Park, and doing the voice for that character. And the whole movie is like they're sitting there going, what do you want to do now?
Honestly, I feel like they probably had, they probably recorded like for in a booth with him for 2 hours because he just said the same stuff over and over again.
But also in the commercials, they had scenes that weren't in the finished film.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they had this whole thing with the mothers. That was the other thing that really upset, well, first of all, yeah, well, I'll say what upset me about the movie. They were setting up a mother-father thing. Both the twins, Gru and Drew, they were separated, their parents separated, and each parent took one, and both parents were terrible. Mm-hmm. Both parents treated their children poorly. You know, saying that you stink and you're not talented and what. And you know, if that was not a handout to the audience saying, we're going to take care of this, we're going to make you feel great when they become the father and mother to each other, that's just like natural. I mean, how could you not do that? And they didn't. The commercials, you saw there was more stuff with the mother, with Drew and Drew's mother, but it's not in the movie. So they must have cut a crap load of this out.
And I have to say something that really kind of weirded me out.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not offended, but weirded me out.
Yeah.
There's two scenes showing both the guy, girls and guys in cartoon. That's a little bit too sexualized.
What do you mean?
The scene where the mother comes up with the swimming
coaches. Oh, yeah, the swimming
that's
coaches.
That's, like, super sexualized. And the other one where Minion fall into the beach. Two girls.
Never seen... Bikini girls. Yeah.
Like, American animation featuring girls with cleavage in animated kids films.
Yeah.
So this is the first one.
Again,
I'm not offended, but I'm just weirded out that they have two over-sexual scenes with both genders in this kids film.
Yeah, but I kind of... I noticed that as well. Didn't upset me or bother me. It just...
For me, the Minions' reaction to it, I was like, ew.
They're
like little dogs that are going to start humping their legs.
Exactly. Well, they're more than little dogs. They're little things that... Okay, that are shaped a certain way, but be that as it may, I always found it amusing that Disney always has very attractive princesses, but never buxom.
Right.
And while these girls were buxom, and it was like these animated girls, and it was
even
so I was
if
like,
they were,
okay.
Usually, I mean, we have
that
I
was
mean,
the
we,
least
we
of my problems.
Characters that has that same thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's more like shape, but. It was never sexualized.
Since this is called the Action Film Autopsy, the Despicable Me's problems are sort of encapsulated in their one fight, which was a dance fight. And it was so... And as soon as the villain...
I forgot what you were even talking about.
Yeah, as soon as the villain said... As soon as Gru says, dance fight, I got excited. I said, this is going to be cool. This is going to be great.
I thought it's going to be very creative.
And it wasn't at all.
It wasn't at all.
And it
the
was
only part
perfunctory
that
and short.
Right, short. Yeah. It's
not developed.
They started like dancing and fighting, whatever, for a little bit. And then all of a sudden...
They stop.
Like, it's over. And then it's over.
They stop.
It was so unsatisfying. And then uncreative.
Yes, and then Gru gets the guitar gun. Which he starts playing a really great song, and again, I got excited again, and then he stopped.
Yeah.
Which again, Kanye
six
Air,
bars.
Kanye Air in that specific shot where the villain is playing the guitar with his left hand on the right hand on the keyboard,
keys.
And then left hand on the neck. I guess.
Neck, yeah.
When you switch to another shot, like it switched to Gru, and Gru's doing the opposite.
The opposite.
So it's like a totally different guitar.
Recycled. So anyway, Kyle Balda, who did Minions and Lorax, and Pierre Coffin, who did all the Despicable Me's and the Minions movies, they were the directors. There was a co-director of Eric Gullen. First directing credit, he was an animator up until now.
Oh, okay.
So they did Despicable Me. There's no action choreographer, stunt coordinator mentioned. I thought Captain Underpants, there was a couple of moments in Despicable Me where I perked up. But again, it goes nowhere. When the Minions...
This is like straight to DVD for me.
Yeah, when the Minions go on to the Sing reality show, which is like America's Got Talent, and they start doing a full musical number.
Yeah.
I went, that's awesome. That's super cool.
Yeah, that was the
cool.
only part I liked just because it was so stupid.
But then it goes nowhere.
Well, yeah, it was pointless.
Then they get sent to prison.
Got sent to prison right away.
For no reason.
Well, for, like, trespassing.
Well, yeah, but then
they go to prison.
They got the whole crowd, like, loving them, and then the cop just comes and grabs them.
I'm not defending it.
Hard
time.
It
was actually
for me, with this film, the first one and the second one, they have pretty good story. And even this one that doesn't have a good story, I personally, like, Jen can vouch for that. Like, I like stupid jokes.
Yeah.
I love stupid jokes. But this one, all of the stupid joke, quote-unquote, are all done by the minions.
Yeah.
There's only a few character moments that were funny, and there's so few that I can't... I didn't laugh at this film at all.
After a while, I started getting insulted. Because it's kind of like, this is the best you can do?
For me, it was frustrating because it's like, okay, like, they already have their own spin-off, like... For me, like, what I liked about the... I did enjoy the Minions, like, the first time I saw...
I enjoyed the Minions.
But for me, it was like, okay, the Minions get their own movie, so now this one, it's like, I wanted to see more of the girls. They were the whole plot of the first one. They just keep getting written out of their own series.
But also, even when they used the girls...
Well, that's what I'm saying. It was really unsatisfying.
The youngest girl wanted to find a unicorn.
Yeah.
And she finds a one-headed baby goat.
One-headed.
Well, it had one head. It did have one head.
Correct.
And one horned, and that's it. I mean, what are they going to do with that? They didn't do anything with it.
I was going to say, though, like, her story, like, out of all the storylines in there, her storyline is my favorite out of the whole film. Because she started, wanted this thing, and then Gru tell her the reality of the thing, and she still accepted.
She's fine with it.
She still accepted as this, like, embrace what
but
it
then,
is. So, like, for me...
But then it's a goat... And we have a big action scene at the end.
Mm-hmm.
The goat should have gotten involved.
Oh, yeah, no. Like, that for me doesn't...
The goat should have butted something.
But, like...
It does matter.
Her relationship with the goat and whatever, that's her own, like, continued story. And for me, for her character arc, that's the best one in the movie. He's from, like, believing...
Okay.
Because, like, really the wife, Lucy's character arc was, like, super frustrating.
Super non-developed.
Because it came out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was, like, solved.
Actually,
the end of the last one, like, the girls accepted her as their mom at the wedding. That was the whole thing, was that they had a speech for her.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, you're our mom now. So this whole thing, I was like, you just needed something for her, and you just went with maternity.
Yep. Well, it was
like,
her insecurity.
Only thing you could do. No, I understand that, but it was, like...
The mother's insecurity.
But it came out, like, it was just frustrating, because it's like, how about the fact that you lost this job that you were amazing at?
One last thing.
Well, that was all crap,
from
too.
That reminded me. Yeah. Something that really pissed me off a lot when I watch it. She was bouncing from bubbles to bubbles to try to save the girl.
Heels.
Yeah.
Massive heels, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's, which is fine.
No, I would have popped those bubbles.
She... That's exactly what I'm saying.
Exactly
when she tried to save them, she used her hand, popped one of the bubbles. And she used the bubbles to, like, save them. Then why not just pop all of the other bubbles?
Oh,
who cares about the big...
I was talking to somebody at work,
and he saw it
with their kids, and he said that one of his kids was straight up, like, after the movie, like, turned around and asked him, they're like... Like, the first time the diamond gets stolen, or, like, the diamond doesn't get stolen the first time,
right.
But they fail to capture the bad guy, so they get fired, even though the diamond is safe. And then they think that when the diamond gets stolen, he asked the dad, they're like, how come he thinks he's going to get his job back if they get the diamond back when he already got fired when they protected the diamond the first time? And, like, it was one of those things where I was like, this is, like, a story artist with a kid, and I'm like, you're ruining your child.
We have, no, you're making the child good.
Good.
Bring that child to Baby Driver and see what he thinks.
He'd like it.
Now, anyway, we all could have done better. We were doing better in the theater as we were rewriting it, as we were watching it.
No, I was not. I literally almost fell asleep.
Yeah, same.
I was rewriting like
crazy.
I was
slouching down because it was so
I've
boring.
Never,
because
I leaned on him halfway through. I've never... I was also tired. Like, that day I had stayed up late, and
especially
I was really tired.
Especially after the trailer of Ninjago.
Oh, my God, I know. The trailer for Ninjago
is better than this whole film.
It's very true.
Like, 2 minutes, and it,
that's
like,
very true.
So much
it's so much more quotable already.
Yeah.
The trailer for Ferdinand is better than this whole movie. Now.
Yeah.
We were going to do a joke. I was going to do a joke. I was about to announce the next film, the last film that we're going to review on this podcast, and then Jen and Miko would have gone, no, I don't want to hear, and they would have run out of the room.
I mean, I sincerely would have done that. I am going to do that.
No, you're not going to do that. You know why?
Why?
Because remember Fate of the Furious?
Yeah.
Remember that I waited?
Yeah.
Well, I cannot, in good conscience, do our review
of
Spider-Man Homecoming without you two.
All right.
So we are going to postpone our attack. Ooh. It won't be an attack on Spider-Man Homecoming.
Cool.
Until next time.
Well, we'll watch it while you're at Comic-Con.
I
want to see it.
Are we pushing Spider-Man for August?
Yeah, I'm afraid we have to.
Wow, the August show is going to be really good.
Yeah.
War of
the Planet of the Apes. Go ahead, we can tell them.
Oh, that's Spider-Man.
We got, what is it, Blonde
Thor,
Ambition?
Atomic Blonde.
Blonde
Ambition. Thor's going to be out, too?
I think Thor's
going to be out. No, Thor's not going to be out.
I don't remember.
That's not until November.
Really? They've been playing trailers for that shit forever.
Yeah, it's not before then. But we have Atomic Blonde. We have, we have Valerian.
Oh, yeah, Valerian.
Right.
And a bunch of others. So that's going to be a big...
I'm excited. The comic's good. I don't know about the movie.
No, can't. The movie's going to be Luc Besson.
What the studio's doing it?
I mean, it's Luc Besson, that's all
studio.
You need. It doesn't matter.
It Sony,
matters a little bit.
Probably.
Actually, I think it is Sony.
Okay.
Yeah, but be that as it may, and so is Spider-Man Homecoming, a co-production, Sony's Columbia TriStar. We're not leaving.
That was
I'm
Baby
not saying.
Driver.
I know.
I'm fighting with Mika.
Oh, you're fighting with him in silent.
Why?
Because this he's is like, it's not going to be good.
This is better than Despicable Me 3. Good,
because there have been a lot of fantastical movies
that didn't pan out as good. The thing with Valerian...
Like Jupiter Ascent. That movie sucked.
Yeah, but I'm saying Valerian is
really
like a genre... Like
I know the book. I know the book.
No,
I know the greatness of the comic or the book.
Okay.
But it usually does not translate into a film.
Oh yeah.
Especially a book, a world that vast.
The reaction of my friends.
That's my concern.
The reaction of my friends who have seen it has been all over the map.
Mm.
Some people,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Some have said one a guy who I trust, William Bibbiani. Hey, Bibbs. Hopefully we'll see you at the Comic Con. We always have a barbecue lunch every year at the Comic Con. He's a reviewer for Crave Online, I think, and he said if you liked, and he named a couple, you know, Fifth Element and stuff like that, mm-hmm. you deserve to see this movie in the theater. But other people have said it is mental masturbation at its best and or worst.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
So we shall see.
We will see.
Yep. It'll give. So anyway, thank you very much for listening. Next time in 2 weeks we're going to have another interview a podcast, and I've got a lot lined up. Hopefully we'll be doing a lot at the Comic-Con, and we'll see you.
The Comic-Con.
San Diego Comic-Con. It is the Comic-Con.
I mean...
Everybody else copies.
Comic-Con.
Everybody else copies.
It's not about, like, original... It's just, like, the Comic-Con.
It's international San Diego Comic-Con.
You know what? Quiet you.
Oh.
I am from San Diego, sort of.
And also, yeah, and we will... And also,
from L.A.
Also, I'll let you know that if everything goes the way it's supposed to, I will put on both my own site, rickmyers.com, and on this site, the playlist that I showed at Comic-Con, and also reveal all the astonishing things that happened, hopefully, 2 days ago.
Yeah, you should do, like, a recap episode.
Maybe I will. Maybe we'll. Maybe instead of the interview, I'll do a recap episode.
Why not both?
She is a rebel, this person. This is, we're going to have an ethereal, dreamlike ending here.
That you're going to be deeply dissatisfied
by? It's going to grow from mild disappointment to deep dissatisfaction over a period of days.
It's a great way to end your own podcast.
That's right. I'm sure all of you do. So are we ready for the sign-off, everybody?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to get so I can turn it off at the right moment. Here we go. Ready. 1, 2, 3. Use your blinkers, jackass.
Okay, break it up. Break it up. For now.
You don't give up, do you?
Listen in next time for more film fun, frenzy, and friends. Until then, check out actionfilmautopsy.com, where the excitement never ends.
On